It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Wait, yes, he got him! And Aaron Nola leads two. Zagora on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab!
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 357. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, lots to get to here on the podcast. Major League Baseball is thinking of a new playoff format, and we are here to talk about it. I'm here to yell about it, frankly. I don't know how Justin and Liz feel about it, but we're going to get into it here coming up in just a few minutes. Also, some real crappy moves by the Mets and one player from the Astros made news here on Monday afternoon. We're going to get into that. Spring training is getting underway this week. Pitchers and catchers reporting to Clearwater. We'll give you some of our spring training storylines for the Phillies down in Clearwater, and we'll get into some other stuff too in honor of the Oscars, which took place on Sunday night. Joining me, as they do every week, is the great Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports and Justin Clue, who's also great from Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus. You can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. You can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz. How are you?
I'm angry about the new playoff proposal. How are you?
I'm fine, Justin. How are you doing, buddy?
What do you guys think Brody Van Wagenen keeps in that little safe in his locker in the Mets training facility?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think in reality, nothing, but in theory, Jacob, like something that he's using to keep Jacob deGrom in New York forever, like something that has trapped him there.
Well, and I was going to say, if this was a mid-90s baseball movie, it would be a diamond stud in one of his ears.
Oh, my God.
Wow. I was going to say some kind of like lock of Jacob deGrom's hair that he's used as some kind of Harry Potter like potion to keep him in New York, like you were saying.
Yeah. See, yeah. There's endless possibilities, and that we know it exists at all is
he has awesome. A locker like one of the big boys. Like them.
For those of you who aren't on Twitter, aren't on baseball Twitter, and don't know what the heck we're talking about, the New York Mets. You're much better off. You come here to us, and we'll inform you of what's going on in that fun little world. But the New York Mets let cameras take some snapshots of their new spring training facility, and it's massive. It looks like a dadgum cathedral, but. What they're not going to allow their minor league affiliate in Port St. Lucie to do is actually use that facility, because they said they want it to serve as motivation for the minor league players for what they'll see when they get to the big league. So, you know, it's like putting a big chocolate cake in front of somebody who hasn't eaten in 2 weeks and telling them, you can't have it, here's some saltines. You know, I mean, it was really mean. I don't know what you...
So douchey.
It's just mean, and, you know, I don't... Justin, maybe I'm crazy, but I don't think that's motivating if I'm a minor league player. I'm thinking that's just crappy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what impression the Mets got that made them think they had to do carrot dangling type rewards for their prospects. But I almost thought that might have been conjecture on the part of the writer who shared it, saying just like, oh yeah, just because this is the big league locker room and it's nice. The Mets are using it to tantalize their prospects. But who knows? Who knows with this organization? Because that was followed up by a picture of the minor league locker room, and it's not like it was a rat hole or anything, but we're all aware of the plight of minor leaguers in this league. And yeah, that kind of management stuff. I mean, at this point, with all we know about the Mets and all that's happened with the Mets and the Mets being the Mets, if you're a minor leaguer in that organization, don't you kind of know better at this point? Like, the Mets are like, look, up here you get a big locker room, and you'd be like, well, yeah, but then like a big snake's going to eat me or something, because it's the Mets. Like, I know you can't just trick me with a big room. I know there's other stuff that's going to happen to me once I put that Mets uniform on, opening me up to the century-spanning hex that was cast on this team at some point in its twisted history. So, yeah. I don't know if a big locker room is going to change that for me.
That's true, Liz. I didn't think about it in those terms. Did you?
I did not. I was. Yeah. It's so. It's just so crap. It's so Mets. It feels like it's a bro. Like, I'm trying to figure out who said that. I think it was Anthony DiComo that tweeted about that. And I'm trying to figure out who said that, because it doesn't feel like conjecture to me. Like, it could kind of be, but I don't, why would he say that? There's no reason for him to say that particular thing, or for him to believe it, or to want to transmit that thought.
It's giving
terrible.
Them the benefit of the doubt, which they do not deserve.
No, nobody on the Mets deserves any benefit of the doubt.
No, they don't deserve the benefit. It's just, I mean, I had to write about the Mets earlier today because they managed to screw up the last sale, the possible sale of the team so badly that they've now had to leak to a Bloomberg reporter that they are absolutely going to give up control of the team as soon as it's sold. Like, they've put that out in the world specifically because they're going to open up bids. You know, they're going to do it now in a traditional auction style, and they believe they're going to get even more than they were offered before. Or at least this is the Bloomberg reporter's take on it, which I didn't write about specifically, but the Bloomberg reporter thinks that the Mets will now get larger offers because the Wilpons have pledged to stay away and give up the team when it's sold. That's really that. I mean, I have a whole conspiracy theory I shared with my husband earlier today, because the Wilpons have allowed Mr. Met to go to a Mike Bloomberg, the opening of Mike Bloomberg's Queens campaign office. Mr. Met is showing up. So either the Bloomberg campaign bought a few hours of Mr. Met's time, or it was generously donated by Bloomberg supporters, the Wilpons, which I wouldn't be surprised at. And so now I have a whole conspiracy theory that they leaked it specifically to a Bloomberg reporter.
Oh yeah, I'm sure that was part. I'm not sure, but I would imagine, you know.
But like, yeah, because I'm like, why would a Bloomberg reporter have this absolutely insane this story, but also this insane take on it?
Well, it's really interesting. I don't know in our lifetime if the state of New York sports has ever been worse than it is right now. You've got the Yankees, and that's it. The Mets are a disaster. The Knicks are a
disaster. The Knicks, you can't even speak about the Knicks without laughing. They are hilariously terrible.
The Jets and the Giants are two of the worst franchises in football. It's really amazing.
We live in such an age.
We do. If you think Philadelphia sports has hit some rocky times over these last few years, New York is right in the middle of what I think is perhaps the worst stretch for professional sports in the history of the Big Apple, which is really kind of fun as we sit here.
We love to see it.
Yeah.
We're going to look back on this period in time in which everyone was focused on the Astros for so long and everyone was just looking elsewhere, and it'll be like peeling up a couch cushion that's like sticking to the couch as you're picking it up. Everything the Mets were able to get away with no one noticing in this time while everyone was focused on the Astros. Like, we know about this and, you know, other various Metsings that have occurred over the course of the winter, but like, we're going to go back and some reporter's going to be like, hey, like this pyramid.
The Mets killed a guy.
Run out of the sub basement the entire time. There's a still in there.
The Mets killed a guy. I'm just imagining how that might have happened. Yeah. Like, what kind of spring training accident happened to whoever it is that they killed? Stepping on a succession of rakes, I feel like, as they're going through the training facility.
I mean, their training staff has tried to kill a couple of players, at least, over the last few years. And we know that for sure. So
this
is
Jason Bay on a plane ride with a concussion.
Right. So, I mean, do we really think murder is all that far behind? Let's be honest with ourselves here. We were talking about the Astros just a second ago. Mike Bolsinger is a former big league pitcher, played for the Toronto Blue Jays in 2017. His last game ever in 2017 was against the Houston Astros in Houston. He got blown up in a third of an inning, gave up four runs, four hits, three walks, and that was the last time he was ever on a big league mound. He was demoted later that day, sent down to AAA, and never reached the majors. He's suing the Houston Astros now in civil court, looking for unspecified damages. He wants the Astros essentially to give back the bonus money they earned from winning the World Series in 2017 and devote it to charities and all that kind of stuff, in lieu of the Astros cheating scandal. And that's all. That's fine. Bolsinger's lawsuit has no chance of winning anything in court. It's really just more to make a point than anything else. But what I think got everybody on, again, baseball Twitter up in a rage today was a completely ridiculous tweet by Josh Reddick of a gif of – who was the character laughing in the gif?
It was Kitty from That 70s Show.
That's right. Kitty from That 70s Show laughing hysterically at Bolsinger's – seeming to laugh at Bolsinger's lawsuit. And it just shines the light, Justin, on the fact that these Astros players, they don't think they've done anything wrong, do they?
The follow-up tweet to that was him claiming that it wasn't about what everyone thought it was about. But when you're tweeting contextless gifs in the middle of your team being at the center of this sport-wide generational cheating scandal, again, you are not able to speak from any sort of high place in that scenario. And that's kind of been, I think, one of the more frustrating parts. I haven't really like sat alone with my thoughts on this, and really considered what it is that I'm like most angry about, because, you know, we're kind of at a point where you'd rather almost just walk away and stop paying attention than get as worked up as you could get, about this scandal. But today I kind of just like learned a little bit about what I'm specifically mad about. And that is not just like the lack of accountability, but the fact that apparently we've graduated from players not saying anything because, you know, they don't want to put themselves in a legal bind or any sort of become the one who admits to anything. But now we've got guys who are just like openly showing that we got away with it and we don't care. And right. I, that's what I've been asking throughout this entire ordeal, is if the players don't care enough to take the game itself seriously and play it the way that it's been agreed upon to be played, why should anyone else who's not even a baseball player care about baseball? Like, they're tearing it down. Why should we sit here and watch them? And this is kind of that to a T. And it's just when coupled with the frustration of seeing some Astros fans' reactions, which have gone from like, this sucks, but like, stop taunting me about it, or the Yankees wouldn't have won anyway, or whatever, you know, whatever reasoning they've come up with. It's the people who are like, It's time to move on. Let's focus on 2020. Or like, I don't care that they cheated. They still won, and we still got to do that. So it's, you know, and plus it still counts. They haven't stripped anything away. There's like this hurry to move on, and we've barely lived in this yet. Like Liz and I talked about on continued success. Every time you look away, this whole thing mutates a little bit and gets even worse. And little things like Reddick posting a contextless GIF. Yeah, you can make that seem like it's nothing. You can, but it's also not nothing, clearly. Like, objectively, that's a response to something on a day, on another day, when more frustrations about this are being aired and little developments are happening. This is what people are talking about in baseball right now. So if you're going to be Josh Reddick and tweet something like that, it just kind of – you're just showing what a lot of people have been assuming this whole time, that nobody gives a crap about getting – no one cares that they did this. No one cares really even that they got caught, and they're ready to just move on, and they're probably going to be allowed to do that. So that, I think, is, to me personally, what I'm starting to find the most frustrating about this, that guys are free to do that, and really, who's going to stop them?
Justin, when you cheat – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to compliment Justin on reeling in the swear word. It was like a fish that almost leaped out of the boat, and he grabbed it by the tail before it hit the water. That was really well done.
That's impressive. I've almost swore like four or five times already on this podcast, so look out.
I felt agile. I don't know. I never do. So.
Yeah, very agile on with the tongue. Yeah, very good stuff.
When you cheat, you don't get to laugh. You just don't. When you cheat, you shut up. When you cheat, you just stop talking. You just don't say anything. It's really easy to shut up. Take Twitter off your phone. Like, I don't get it. Like, why would he just do that? He's – Josh Reddick hit 275 in the regular season. You want to know what he hit in the World Series? 214.
It's not good.
No, it's bad. When he doesn't have someone banging a trash can behind him, in 2019 he sucked. So he can shut up, because it doesn't matter if Mike Bolsinger – was bad before he hit the Astros, which is true.
Yeah.
It matters that you cheated, and now everyone gets to question you for the rest of your career. So get used to it. Get used to it.
Just own it and get used to it. Exactly.
And the anger, again, I don't want to repeat my, but just like the anger from their side or from just people who have aligned with the Astros on this for whatever reason, the anger in like repeating questions about this as if you're like morally superior in any way, as if it's like been long enough, as if it's ridiculous people want to know. We have so many answers that we don't have right now
right.
in regards to this. So no, we're probably going to dwell on this for a while. I mean, in a way, I am sick of it, but also you can't just move on yet. You can't. And we're not ready to laugh about this yet.
No.
We can't be.
You're sick of it because there's been no admission of anything from anyone. There's been no show of, no one's been contrite. No one, I mean.
Not among the players anyway.
Two players have apologized in some way, and that's Dallas Keuchel and Charlie Morton, two players who are not on the team anymore and who were pitchers and who had almost nothing to do with the cheating and who could barely muster anything. Charlie Morton didn't even apologize. He said, I regret that I didn't stop it. But he also said in the same breath, it would also take a lot. I feel like it probably would have taken a lot to stop it. That's a hypothetical.
Yeah.
Well, I think so too.
Of course it would have taken a lot, most likely because you did nothing. Like, these aren't apologies. This is people noticed. I guess it sucks for me because now you've all noticed what we did.
And that's what Sean Doolittle said, that there just hasn't been any closure yet. And so for the players who are mad, and obviously for the fans who are mad, there's just nowhere to go.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the fans don't know what to believe even. You know, which players were responsible? How many players were responsible? Which wins were real and not real? Fans aren't ready to joke about it. And players really need to really – I mean, I get – you know, you're right. Bolsinger was not a good pitcher when he faced the Astros that day. But, you know, the point remains they cheated in 2017. It's admitted. It's fact. And like Liz said, I think you put it beautifully. Just shut up. You cheated. Shut up. You haven't earned the right to joke about it at this point. So one other thing I wanted to get to before we talk about the Phillies in spring training is interesting piece in the New York Post came out saying that Major League Baseball is weighing a move that would increase the number of playoff teams from 5 to 7 in each league beginning in 2022.
Get out your flow charts, everyone.
stay with me here, okay? So here's how this would go down. The team with the best record in the National League and the American League would receive a bye to avoid the wild card round and would go directly to the division series. The other two division winners and the wild card with the next best record would each host all three games in a best of three wild card round. So the bottom three wild cards would have no first round home games. So this is what it would look like if we use the American League last year as an example. The Astros had the best record. They would have received a bye. The Yankees, who won the American League East and had the second best record, would have had the choice to pick among the Rays, the Indians, and the Red Sox. All would have been wild card teams last year. Boston had the worst record of that group, so the Yankees could have picked them, or they could have picked the Indians or the Rays. And the idea here is that by adding another potential wild card team in each league, adding one more wild card team in each league. No, you'd be adding two more, wouldn't you? Yeah, you'd be adding two more. Is that right? Because right now you have five in each league. You have three division winners and two wild cards. I guess here you'd have three division winners and seven. And five wild cards in each league? That's what I'm getting confused about.
I think you're illustrating the problem with this and that it makes no effing sense.
It's confusing.
I think that's part of the problem. It's needlessly confusing. It's
opaque.
The article in the Post talks a lot about MLB wanting to expand its fan base by making baseball apparently more complicated and to introduce more television programming, which they already have a hard time attracting people to care about at all. Like, no one watches, like, the award ceremonies they already do. Why would anybody watch, you know, a show hosted by Matt Vasgersian where they're going to pick, where playoff teams will pick each other? Like, they're going to send out Aaron Judge to do this? No, they're going to send out a piece of paper, and that's it. Like, this is the worst idea I've heard in a long time, and I'm even counting the three-batter minimum. This is worse than the three-batter minimum, and that is an awful idea.
Yeah, this so you would have three division winners and four wild cards in each league. And so I'm more upset. I'm as upset, Justin, with the addition of two more playoff teams here to the mix. And I get why they want to do it, two more in each league, because it would the argument here is you'd have fewer excuses for teams in the middle to tank, to decide just not to spend any money on their roster for a team that's projected to win 79 to 80 games to maybe go for it so you can get to 84 or 85 wins, because 83, 84 wins, that's about where we're talking about for the fourth wild card team in each of these different leagues and stuff. And so that's the other reason they say to do it, but this is way too complicated. It bastardizes the regular season as far as I'm concerned. You don't have to be very good to make the playoffs in Major League Baseball under this format.
Yeah,
that's
great, great news.
Yeah, it is
really for the Phillies. No, I
and all the other teams that aren't trying.
Good point, though.
Somebody brought this up today.
In a big way, yeah.
Somebody brought this up today, and I know this isn't the first time this thought has been shared. By the way, Liz, I thought you were angry sneezing a second ago when I heard that reaction.
I'm so sorry. I'm losing my mind that Major League Baseball wants to change its playoff format to suit tanking teams.
I just thought you had put your head through the wall, but that's I'm glad
you kind of wish.
Yeah. But though someone brought the mention today, like at least it felt like Bud Selig liked baseball. Like he at least looked at baseball and was like, I like that. It's not bad to me. Rob Manfred is just, I mean, he kind of embodies this era, right? Somebody who feels like doesn't understand and certainly has no real appreciation for the sport over which he governs, to the point that he's willing to just kind of disassemble it and put it back together for the sake of what he's been told is a good idea. But every time he announces something, everyone is against it. Everyone. And part of that is because if you change, any amount of change is going to be greeted by a multitude of grievances among baseball fans. That's just how the collective kind of operates. Sometimes it's one section, sometimes it's another section, but somewhere an entire group of people is definitely pissed off. But like that being said, these have not been, not to make that point, but these have all been bad ideas. I'm not the kind of guy who's going to say every idea is bad, but every single one of these ideas sucks or has sucked for the most part. Some of this stuff I eased up on a little bit. I do like the idea of a top seed being able to pick its own opponent, but the way you just conveyed those rules, John, and you are a talented communicator and skilled speaker.
Yes.
And I gotta tell you, that sucked to listen to. I tuned out. I tuned to another channel that I haven't accessed since like high school. I was being talked at in a situation I didn't want to hear anymore. And I just have no idea what you said. So I feel like I instinctively lean towards the kind of person who roots for chaos. I mean, that's what we all say at the end of every postseason when all the insane scenarios are being outlined that could happen, where everyone's like, oh, I just want to see chaos. We want things to go crazy, but this kind of devalues having a good baseball team and just kind of leans into all the stuff we dislike about the sport right now, in that it rewards not being the best team. It rewards you for dumping a generational talent and franchise player to the Dodgers, or at least makes your life easier than it should be. And it doesn't have to happen. And it's also not going to work to pull in new fans. Like, sorry, man. You know what we talked about in Philadelphia a whole lot tonight? We talked about Joel Embiid and Jimmy Butler having a single comment exchange on Instagram.
Yeah.
That's gonna draw new fans into right. baseball. Right. Not setting the rules to chaos and encasing every baseball game in a pinball machine.
You know what fixes the game? Making the baseball something you can actually depend on, so the game doesn't become like a cheap bastardized version of itself. You know, fixing cheating scandals so that the integrity of the game isn't called into question. You know, that's the kind of stuff they need to be focusing on here. This stuff, you know, it's you cannot make something more complicated and expect to draw newer, younger fans in. millennials and what is the group after millennials? Young. They don't want complicated.
Zoomers, I believe they're
okay,
called.
Whatever they're called. They don't want more complicated. They're not looking for their lives to become more complicated. They're looking for things to be laid out as easily as possible in front of them. You got to make the game better, not make it more complicated. And so, yes, there are good reasons to do a whole number of really bad things in this world. You know what I mean? Like, there, you can come up with a rationale. You can come up with a reason why a
lot
of things.
Where are you going with this?
I don't know, but I'm saying.
I don't know.
I can
come up with the rationale for murder right now. Do it.
I don't want to go there. But now what I'm saying is the reasons that they have for adding more wild card teams is to avoid having so many teams tank. But you're also, and you are kind of you're rewarding teams that have the best record in the league to give them a first round bye. But didn't we also decide a few years ago that giving teams a bye in the first round was bad for those teams because you don't want those days off in baseball because those days off hurt teams? Like, what happened to that? What happened to that thought process? So it's way too complicated. This is a terrible idea. It would have to be approved by the new CBA, and
believe this will be approved.
No.
There is, I'm trying to figure out why this is out there, but my guess is just smoke and mirrors because, the Players Association is very, very angry, at Jock Peterson being jerked around at his arbitration hearing because he wanted it to be delayed. Because he was in the middle of being traded. He didn't end up getting traded. But the Players Association's real angry right now. I feel like this is just smoke and mirrors to distract everybody because there's no way they're going to get anything new done while they're trying to prevent. Like, maybe they figure something out, I don't know, in a various numbers of categories. I can't imagine them putting a new playoff format into the CBA –
yeah.
When it's supposed to try and stop a strike.
Right.
This doesn't have a prayer of going anywhere. And so as amusing as this terrible idea is, we should all take a second and think about the purpose of releasing it and why it's out there and that it's done to sort of distract and undermine the player's position. Because now no one's talking about the Mookie Betts trade.
Right.
Tomorrow, everyone's still going to be making jokes about this
and listen,
because it deserves to be mocked.
I want to say real quick, I don't think this was done on purpose, but as I was sitting here thinking about it, there is no more time when like baseball is more widespread in the cities that have teams than when they make the playoffs. And if we're talking like an 83 win team that doesn't really deserve to be there, if they, which I assume they would, do like a full-on market lean into being a playoff team, even though that doesn't mean what it used to mean under this system. And like that is a way that you could probably reach more young people or like you get taken to a game by someone who is a fan or something where everyone's just getting like psyched. I mean, we never remember what playoff baseball in Philadelphia was like and people who didn't give a crap about baseball were coming down to the park and selling it out every night. So in a way that I can definitely see how that makes sense. It's just impossible to believe that any of this is done for the good of baseball or that any of it would work because it just seems like none of this comes from a place that anyone's thinking, yes, this will help baseball be more enjoyable. It just comes from, this will help us distract from this. This will help us make more money, or this will solve what we're focusing on that isn't a real problem in baseball.
Right. And you just were illuminating the point I was trying to make, that there are good reasons for doing something like this, even though it's a terrible idea. And folks listening, we like fun. We want baseball to be fun. I'm all for a rule change that makes baseball more enjoyable, more fun for everybody. But this doesn't do that. This makes it more complicated. It makes it more confusing, and it's trying way too hard. Baseball has some problems to fix. There's no doubt about it. It needs to get younger. It needs to draw in younger fans, and they need to figure out a way to do that. This this is not the way to do it as far as we are concerned. So, again, like Liz and Justin and I have been saying, this has no chance of actually happening, I don't think. It's kind of one of those things. It's also a possibility that was just kind of floated out there to test public reaction to see if there's any kind of momentum for it. And most of what I've seen are players and people who cover the game saying this is pretty stupid.
When Trevor Bauer has a good point, you know you've
You've reached a bridge too far. Yeah. Well, let's take our first break. When we come back, Philly spring training gets underway this week, pitchers and catchers anyway, but by the middle of the week, pretty much most of the team will be there. That's kind of how it goes nowadays. We'll get into some spring training storylines that each of us are watching, and we'll do that next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So with the Phillies getting ready to start 2020 spring training down in Clearwater, we've got a number of things that we're going to be keeping an eye on here over the next few weeks. I wrote a piece for The Good Fight that came out on Monday listing what I thought were the top 15 storylines for spring training, and we're going to elaborate on a lot of those here as the spring moves along. It was just kind of like a quick primer for everybody to get ready for spring training, which pitchers and catchers, I think, reporting on Tuesday. So as you're hearing this, pitchers and catchers are reporting to Clearwater. So, I know. It's happening, Justin. It's happening now. as you're talking, as people are listening to this, it's happening. Give me a spring training storyline that you're particularly interested in, Justin.
Oh, okay. I think I have to start with the broadest one because we have been talking about it all winter, and I know there's a nice long list of like 15, 16 different narratives, and I think Liz and I had talked about how we're going to cycle through over the next couple weeks how important each individual member of the team is and how key their success is. I landed on Jake Arrieta just as personal preference, but I think all of this comes under the umbrella of the new management regime. I think that you've started to see a couple of quotes from players saying like, oh yeah, I think, switching out obviously the manager, but also the hitting coach and the pitching coach and kind of bringing in a whole
literally
new
everyone.
Triumvirate of the coaches making probably the most impactful decisions on the team. I think he's going to have the widest effect. I think you're going to see a culture change, and I think you have every reason to trust Joe Girardi. And I know, we've kind of talked ourselves into just about anybody who's come down here to manage the Phillies, but in this case, this is one of the highest profile managing hires the Phillies have ever made, if not the highest profile. So I'm ready to see what the difference is, because not only will it potentially have a positive impact on all the Phillies comprehensively as a team, how they operate and allow them to kind of reach their ceilings a little more aggressively, but it's also going to teach us a little bit about what a manager does, something we ask every year at different points, because we're going to see the difference between what this team was able to accomplish with one guy and what they're able to accomplish with another guy. And we all know what the difference is between those guys. So I'm curious about that, because it's sort of being able to say, every storyline is my favorite by pointing out that leadership is going to change just about everything.
Liz, how about you? Is there a particular storyline that you are most interested in, or at least at the moment think is a particularly intriguing storyline for the Phillies here?
Well, I'm interested in a couple. I'm interested in the JT Realmuto extension, but I also think that once spring training starts, the Phillies aren't going to do anything fast. I think they're probably going to move this to the middle of the season sometime. So I don't think anything's actually going to happen. And I'm really wary of watching an established major league player in spring training and trying to figure out, is he better? Because
right.
No one knows.
Yeah.
No one, especially with a pitcher, because I will be watching Aaron Nola very, very closely all the time. Because his, him bouncing back is very important. I can't trust anything I see in spring training, but the one numbers I can trust for what I see is Alec Bohm.
Oh, yeah.
I will be watching him very, very – him being good is very important to the Phillies succeeding this year. I want him to do well, and he's going to be playing for a job. I mean, essentially, he will not be given one out of spring training because – I mean, unless someone gets hurt or Alec Bohm hits literally 450, he's going to spend the first however many days it is for him to lose a year of service time in the minors. That's almost certain, but he'll be up. And him doing well in spring training is very important, and I'm very interested to see how he does.
Yeah, no, he's going to be fascinating because unlike Spencer Howard, Alec Bohm will be there at the start of spring training. If Spencer Howard was going to be there at the start of spring training, I think he'd be the guy all of us would be watching most closely to because yeah. Howard is probably the most important prospect in this organization at this point, and he's the untouchable. He's the guy the Phillies absolutely will not trade for anyone, and they can't. They have to hold on to him, but he only pitched about 70 innings last year when you count his time in the Arizona Fall League, and so he's going to be on a limited innings limit this year. I would imagine they won't let him go anywhere over 140. Yeah, I can't imagine they're going to let him pitch more than double the innings that he pitched last year, and they might not even go that high, which if I'm the Phillies, then I'm holding off on starting him here in the regular season until May. You know, I'm kind of starting him about a month behind everybody else, maybe even a month behind everybody else, so that maybe you can bring him up, say, in July or August if he's in AAA and he's really killing it and you need somebody in the starting rotation, which I think we all agree they are probably going to need help in the starting rotation this year. We've got Nick Pivetta and Vince Velasquez battling it out for a spot in the starting rotation. And the winner gets that number five spot. The loser goes to a bullpen where we're going to be the big storyline for me here this spring is the bullpen arms, the relievers. I mean, there are a lot of jobs to be won in that bullpen and a lot of arms who are going to be trying to win them. Some of them are veteran guys who've come in on minor league deals like Francisco Liriano, that McLean kid that they signed from, Seattle, I think it was. And they re-signed Tommy Hunter to a deal. You know, does he have anything left in the tank? I'm really curious. Probably the relief pitcher I'm most interested in seeing is Sir Anthony Dominguez. How is he going to look? He's vitally important to this team in 2020. And so all of these different things, these are different storylines to watch here as the Phillies get ready to start spring training, because they don't have an established bullpen. They don't have a starting rotation. Justin, I agree with you. I think Jake Arrieta is also an arm to watch here. I don't know if any of you guys saw some pictures of him that came out today. He's already in Clearwater. He looks much trimmer.
How's that possible?
I don't know, but maybe it was the angle of the photo, but he looked
couple of bones removed, or he had all the spurs vacuumed out.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't say that because I expect him to be good. I say it because if he were good, it would probably have the biggest impact, especially in a rotation in which, you know, Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler are performing the way the Phillies hope they do. Having three reliable pitchers, which I think the Phillies might, but one of them's not going to be Jake Arrieta. This is my point. He adds to any equation if he is good.
Yeah.
But he won't be. Well,
he's earning $25 million this year. AAV. I mean, that's number three starter money. I mean, they need him to perform like that in order to justify the amount of payroll that they're spending on him. He's a big reason why they couldn't go out and sign a guy like Hyunjin Ryu, because they don't want to go over the luxury tax. If Jake Arrieta is not giving you what he gave you last year, you're throwing $20 million out the window, essentially. I mean, right. That's $20 million of dead money that you're not able to use on anything. So that's,
and I know a lot of people would answer the question of like, oh, who having a big season makes the biggest impact for this team. I think a lot of people would say Rhys Hoskins, and it's not like that's a wrong answer. But I think if you get a Rhys Hoskins who can hit, you know, 260, and then everything else is also going pretty well, then he doesn't have to be this terrifying monster.
Yeah.
He just has to be a capable and at times above average major league slugger. Jake Arrieta would be a huge asset to this team because I think a lot of people don't expect much from him. So him having a big season would, I think, be one of the biggest pivots this team could make. But yeah, I'm learning not to go into that with too open a mind.
right. Well, we've seen too much from Arrieta over the last year and a half that
expect nothing.
Yeah, not to expect anything. I'll tell you, the other guy I'm really looking forward to seeing more of is Adam Haseley out in center field. I'm very curious to see. He had a very nice rookie season last year. He hit 260 with a 320 on base percentage. He didn't hit for much pop. He had a slugging percentage under 400, but Based on the time that he was on the Phillies last year, if you prorated it out to a full season, he'd have been about a 1.5 to 2 win player last year, basically just on defense alone. And if the rest of the lineup is hitting, you don't need Adam Haseley to kill it at the plate. You just need him to not be an automatic out, to come up with the big hit from time to time hitting in the eight spot, and to play the kind of defense that he played last year. If he gives you anything with the bat, and I think there is a little bit more there from Adam Haseley, I think he can be a doubles guy. He's got a nice stroke if he can hit left-handers even just a little bit next year. It'll be very interesting to see what kind of season he can put together, because the Phillies, I gotta believe they're a little nervous about their center field situation. Adam Haseley is unproven. Roman Quinn can't stay healthy. The only other guy that they have who can play center field is maybe Andrew McCutchen. And I hate to bring his name up, but Odubel Herrera is still with this organization. He's gonna start the season in AAA because it doesn't sound like he's getting released anytime soon. He cleared waivers. He's gonna go to the minor league complex. And I'm wondering here, and you know, maybe this would never happen in a million years, but if Haseley really is horrible. Let's say Roman Quinn gets hurt and they have an injury or two in the outfield, and Odubel Herrera is hitting 290 in Lehigh Valley. Do they call him up? I think they might call him up.
I was gonna say probably. I think, go ahead, Justin.
Well, I was gonna say, I think based on what we know about Matt Klentak, I know, you know, based on things I've read from him, like direct quotes, I don't think he would bat too much of an eye about doing that if they thought they could get away from it from a PR standpoint.
Yeah. I mean, I think if someone's hurt is the only way it happens. I think Adam Haseley, as long as he stays healthy, he has a job. And, you know, with whoever, I can't remember who we were just talking about who is behind him, Roman Quinn too. The only way he comes up and plays is if someone is hurt. I don't think they would demote Adam Haseley or bench him because they don't. I think they would like to avoid Odubel Herrera.
I do too.
That doesn't mean they don't want him or wouldn't play him, but they just want to avoid him.
I'll be very curious also to see, and you mentioned this a little bit, Justin, how Joe Girardi does with this team. And I think we saw with Gabe Kapler last year how they tried to do a lot of innovative things. And I think one of the things that really worked out was they improved the catching defense in spring training with a lot of the drills that they instituted. But I don't know that there was a whole lot else that Gabe Kapler implemented in spring training that really had any kind of an effect during the regular season. I think it'll be good to have a guy who has done this before in spring training. I think things in Clearwater will be more organized this time around, and I think it'll help these guys. I think it'll help the bullpen to know that these guys are going to know when they're supposed to pitch. And, you know, I think Bryce Harper, now that he's going to be not still looking for what team he's going to sign with as spring training opens, he knows he's in Philadelphia. He gets to start spring training in with the Phillies. There's no distractions. He and his wife had the baby, you know. I mean, maybe he's not getting as much sleep as he ordinarily used to. But, you know, I think Bryce Harper could be in for a really big season here in 2020. And that's something else to think about. I mean, he doesn't have any of the personal life pressures of moving to a new city, signing a deal, trying to figure out where you're going to spend the next decade and a half of your life, for crying out loud, just as you're supposed to be getting started on your baseball season. I can understand why in the first 60 games last year he struggled the way he did. So I'm hopeful, and I'm thinking Bryce Harper has a much more consistent season start to finish here in 2020 than he did in 2019 too.
I want to say this, and that is, I know we spent a lot of time kind of raising an eyebrow at Nationals fans who were taunting Bryce Harper for the fact that they won the World Series this year and how it was strange. They had this fixation on it, like they couldn't enjoy their own World Series title without also taunting Bryce Harper, which is an absurd thing for a Philadelphia sports fan to say. I don't understand how you can't just enjoy a victory without drinking your opponent's tears. And I know we sat here and we were like, oh, he's got all this money. He's got a new baby. He does not give a crap about any of this. But you know what?
He gives a little bit of a crap.
I think he does.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And I think we all knew that when we said that. I think he jumped on a plane to Denmark or wherever the hell they went as a family, like right during the World Series for an obvious freaking reason. And I think that's going to be his motivation this year. I think that's going to motivate him a lot, seeing the team, the thing he wants, like the thing he hasn't achieved yet in his career, be won by the team he just left. You know, he wanted a big free agent payday. Check. Got it. Career stability. Wanted to find the right place for him and his check. Got it. He's won an MVP. Check. He's been in the playoffs. Check. Doesn't have a World Series ring. Nationals get it the second he leaves. Yeah, I think that's eaten away at him a little bit. And I think that's going to serve as the little motivation for him this year.
I think that's very well put.
Very well put. I just want to say, I am excited about Joe Girardi. I am more excited about the absence of Gabe Kapler. Because I just started thinking to myself, what is it going to be like this year with Gabe Kapler not around? And I started smiling a lot because he was a lot of what bothered me about the Phillies last year, a lot of what made me upset and angry, his overall attitude, everything he did and said. It was really, by the end of the season, he is why I was not enjoying baseball, which seems extreme, but it's true. I watch the Phillies a lot, and he's why I wasn't enjoying them. And to me, that's a lot of what baseball is enjoying the team that I love. So I am so thrilled he's somewhere else, infecting the Giants of all teams with his ridiculousness.
I think hated by fewer people, but also by a lot of people, is Matt Klentak. And moving forward, mm-hmm. I think we also can tell those people that there's kind of no one left to be fired if things go south. Like, obviously, the ideal scenario is the Phillies are a good team moving forward. But if this all goes wrong again, there's no more insulation between Matt Klentak and Justice, I don't think.
And the door.
No.
I will tell you, I heard Jim Salisbury talking about this on an At the Yard podcast, and he was not ruling out the possibility that if things go sideways, that the Phillies don't even wait till the end of the season.
Yeah.
I'm completely sure.
Yeah, so that'll be it. I didn't mention that in my piece, but that is absolutely a storyline to keep an eye on, is the hot seat of Matt Klentak and this team needing to start well. This is not a team that can start slowly and pick it up at the end of the season. This is a team that needs to start off rather quickly this year and show that they're going to at least be in the playoff hunt for most of the season for Matt Klentak to keep his job. Up next, in honor of the Oscars, Liz and Justin and I have some awards to give out of our own regarding baseball movies, and we'll do that up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So the Oscars were on Sunday night. I know you guys were watching. I tried to catch little bits and pieces of it, but I haven't seen any movies of the. I don't think I had seen one.
I can see where they'd lose you then.
Yeah, missing me just a little bit. Yeah. So I didn't watch much of the Oscars because I was a little bit short on having seen them. But I know you guys watched a lot of the films. And what did you guys think of Parasite winning Best Picture? Right.
Yep.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's excellent.
The Best Picture one. I stopped taking that serious, the Oscars very seriously a couple years ago. But in this particular case, I think Best Picture won.
Was it Crash winning that did it for you?
It was Crash. It was, you know, how much do the opinions of like a group of old white people really reflect what is the best movie? And then you have quotes from the Academy from people saying like, oh yeah, I didn't even watch the movie I voted for. Or yes, I definitely picked this out of spite for this other person. So it's not a process that really objectively rewards anything. I told myself to stop going on this tirade years ago, and here I am doing it.
Well, let's give out some awards of our own. And what we thought is we would give out awards for the best actor in a baseball movie, best actress in a baseball movie, the best moment in a baseball movie, the best baseball play in a baseball movie, and each of our most underrated baseball movies, and we'll do those five categories here, and we'll go back and forth. And Liz, let me start with you. Best actor in a baseball movie.
All right, I could be biased a little bit because I did recently watch A League of Their Own on television, mm-hmm. but I watching it this time through, I could not get over how great Tom Hanks was in that role.
I knew that's where you were going to go, and it's a great answer.
I don't know. Like, as I've always appreciated him, you know, as Jimmy Dugan, but there's just something about him at that period of his career where Tom Hanks was really able to embody a character like that fully. I'm a big fan of his very early work, of a show called Bosom Buddies. I watched it a lot when I was a kid, and it's a long story, but.
Well, do you remember the Family Ties episode where he plays the drunk uncle?
Yes. I love early Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
And he's not quite in that early part of his career, but he's in that great middle stretch where he's disappearing into roles that all feel like they have a really a connection to who he really is. That's what he excels at as an actor, I think, playing roles that have a shred of himself that he can turn into something wonderful. And this is that. He's just inhabiting this role of this sort of gone to seed baseball player who, you know, screwed up his own knee and is now managing, you know, women playing baseball, which is like he starts out being the worst thing ever, but he's so genuine and funny. I mean, he doesn't play any baseball, which is why I was kind of hesitant to pick him, but I don't think you get a better performance, especially one, a comedic performance from anyone in any baseball movie. And I'm including Kevin Costner, who is my platonic ideal of a male baseball star in a movie.
Well, I will also say one quick thing about I heard somebody say this about Tom Hanks's role and his performance in A League of Their Own, is that it actually is what landed him some of the more serious roles that eventually got him nominated for Oscars. Like, that was the role where he really showed he could do serious dramatic work. I know he was nominated for an Oscar for Big before that, but that was a role where he showed a lot of different layers, and I think that's what I remember hearing somebody say that's what really helped him land Philadelphia, as a matter of fact. And that's what started him on being seriously considered an Oscar contender and an Oscar winner, one of the best actors of his generation. So I knew you were going to go there, so I didn't make that my own, but I think we will have a hard time beating that one.
I'm so predictable. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's comforting to know, where you were going to go. So I knew what to stay away from. Justin, best actor in a baseball movie.
Well, I like Liz, I think some of the best bits of Tom Hanks went into that role, and the comedic element, I think, is what makes it such a highlight. That's not a very insightful thing to suggest, but like that's definitely why it entertained me as a kid, and he can still entertain me as an adult in that role. So that's telling you how not just how memorable comedic performance like that can be, but also just like the timelessness of it. And I know that doing comedy is the most difficult type of performance to give. So if that is true, then the hardest performance put on by any actor in a baseball movie ever was Bob Uecker in Major League.
Yeah. I didn't know where you were going in Major League,
either.
But I was hoping that's where you were going, somewhere over there.
You know, I kind of, my first complaint when we talk about baseball movies is always that people are always talking about the same, you know, 7-10 baseball movies. And in making this list, I was like, I'm going to break away from the pack and I'm going to come up with some interesting answers. And then going through like this comprehensive list of baseball movies, I'm like, didn't see it, 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 didn't see it. Okay. So the reason we all talk about the same movies is because they're the only ones we've ever seen. Got it. So in that case, a lot of my answers are from movies that are the movies we talk about when we talk about baseball movies. And you don't talk about baseball movies without also talking about Bob Uecker. He just puts on a master class because the broadcaster is a role in this subgenre that is always filled by, in Rookie of the Year, it's John Candy.
Oh, Angels in the Outfield, so good in that.
I forget who the actor is in Angels in the Outfield, but he's like a well-known character actor, and he's like the antagonist of the movie. Bob Uecker is an irreplaceable part of Major League, and I don't think he ever interacts with the players or any other character.
No, not once.
You think about how tough a performance it is.
Great.
I'm sitting here like, it was so difficult. He had to sit in a booth and probably drank some like real beers while he was acting. So I don't know. I don't know if it was as taxing a performance for him as the challenge of comedy might suggest. But yeah, every line of his is gold. He knows exactly what he's doing. It was one of the rare cases of perfect casting, and not just baseball movies, but any movies. Yeah, so I'm going with Bob Uecker for best performance.
I think Liz's answer is probably the correct one if I'm just basically judging it on the acting done in that particular film. But I'm gonna
absolutely no time to say, Justin, opinion is wrong.
I mean, it was a good try, a good effort by Justin. Incorrect, however. But I'm going to go with James Gammon, who played manager Lou Brown in Major League.
And that's simply, a good one.
Simply because, I mean, he is managing that club. And there's so many quotable lines from him in that movie. When I think about Major League, he's the guy that makes me laugh the most in that film. So, it's not, you know, listen, there's not a lot of range there from James Gammon in this film. I mean, the only other film that I ever remember seeing him in, was Urban Cowboy. I know he's been in other things. But that's the only other movie I remember seeing him in outside of Major League. But I'll never forget him as Lou Brown in that film. And he passed away a few years ago. But that would be my choice for best actor in a baseball movie. Best actress, Justin, let me start with you on best actress in a baseball movie. Go.
Well, I'm going to stay in – well, the thing – looking into best actress, the first thing that jumped out, and I'm sure this will come as no surprise, but how few options you really have, and not just in movies where women play baseball, but just a female character in a baseball movie.
Pretty much.
I forget which movie I was thinking about, but like – oh, Angels in the Outfield. They have the woman who runs the foster home. And I think that's it. There's not really another woman in the movie.
Yeah.
So your options are kind of limited here. That being said, that's not to say that there aren't some absolutely phenomenal performances by women in baseball movies. It's more a shame that they don't have, you know, more roles. I obviously went to – I think there's one of two places you're going to go for this, and I know Liz is going to go to the other one. But if you look at A League of Their Own as a whole, there's a ton of great jobs in there. I honestly think – the supporting cast does a more memorable job of filling out their characters than the two female leads.
I agree.
Totally agree. Lori Petty is terrible.
Davis is kind of wooden in that film.
Yeah,
too.
She is a little bit.
But Biddy Schramm was really memorable. Stillwell's mom, and obviously Rosie O'Donnell was. It was like enjoyable to watch in that movie. I went with Madonna. She cracks me up in that role. She has a ton of good lines. I love her character. I love how confident but also kind of insecure she is. So I went with her. It was a lot of options, but I went with her.
And Liz, how about you?
Well, I mean, I'm going to have to say Susan Sarandon for very many reasons. I mean, Kevin Costner, I strongly thought about picking him for the best actor because I don't think he's better ever in any other role he's ever done. And I've seen a few Costner movies. I am a fan of his. He's never better than he is in that movie. And you could see why he continued to make baseball movies after that, because he was desperate to recapture that.
Yeah.
But he is so good with Susan Sarandon, who is just glowing. She's just like a beacon of she's like this glowing fairy in this movie. She's so bright. She illuminates every scene she's in. She plays the character so strong and self-possessed, but also with some vulnerability and insecurity. And my father, I remember sitting down to watch this for the first time with my father when I was probably in my teens. And he said, there's a scene at the end where it's raining and she's walking back to her house and, you know, she meets Kevin Costner on the porch. And my dad said, this right here, there's this one scene where they do a close up on her face. He's like, this is the most beautiful scene of any woman in any movie. This one moment right
here. Wow.
And I'm just like, I think you might be right. She's perfect. She's perfect right there. And my crush was born.
Well, there you go. For me, there are a lot of good options. I mean, I think Kim Basinger in The Natural is kind of an interesting character, although it's a little one-dimensional. I think that's the problem with a lot of the female characters in these baseball movies. They're supporting the husband, although in Kim Basinger's point, role. She's the antagonist in the film, which is why I kind of liked it. It's a little bit different. It's not like, you know, Rachel Griffiths, I think, plays Dennis Quaid's wife in The Rookie.
Oh, she's really good in that.
She's really good in that movie.
How did I forget The Rookie? What a good movie.
It's a great movie. It's one of my top 10 for sure. I'm going to show it to my kids soon because it's rated G for crying out loud.
It's so
kid friendly. You can
show
you can
the watch. Miracle too. That's another G rated sports movie. And you need to tell us how they like them. I want to hear all about their reactions.
I will. So there's a few really good ones. I mean, Annie, who plays Kevin Costner's wife in Field of Dreams, turns in a pretty good performance in that film. But I went with Margaret Whitten, who plays Rachel Phelps in Major League. I went back to Major League again because she cracks me up in that movie when Wild Thing comes out in the ninth inning and she says, "I hate this effing song." I lose it. Every single time. Lose it every single time. And it's really interesting. There's a deleted scene that you can find on YouTube. They had an alternate version of the movie where she actually is a sympathetic character. Like, she puts the whole team together. She scouted all the players themselves, and she pulls Lou Brown into her office when Lou Brown is threatening to quit. And she's actually trying to get the team to rally together and play well because she wants them to succeed. And the filmmakers totally threw it out because it just didn't work. Like, you couldn't turn her from being the antagonist to a good guy in the movie. It just didn't work at all. So
then there is no antagonist then, you know?
Right. Like, the Yankees are the antagonist, you know, the team they're, that's it. So it didn't work. And, I thought she was a great villain, a great foil for that team. She was like an alpha male, but a woman owner in Major League Baseball, you know, that you don't, never been one, you know. I mean, no. Mark Schott was.
Let's not talk about Mark Schott.
Move past
Mark Schott. Violent racist.
That's right. All right, couple more here, and we'll move through these a little bit quickly because we're running out of time. Justin, let me start with Liz because Justin, you went first last time. Liz,
thanks for telling me. Go ahead.
Yeah, best moment in a baseball movie, Liz.
Justin, you're going to hate me for this, but one of my favorite moments is actually that really cheesy end of Field of Dreams. I think taken on its own without everything else ahead of it, I think it's fine. My dad loves that movie.
Love it.
I have a spot. There are a million other things I could have picked. There's so many choices. But when I looked at this list, I was just thinking, like, so what's a good baseball moment? And because that one's been hammered into our heads so much, I picked that one because I think it does have a lot of underlying sweetness, and there's two really good-looking dudes in it. You can't say no to that.
I could say no to the good-looking dudes part, but I get what you're saying. Liz, Justin, how about you? Best moment?
Liz, I got to tell you something. I cannot stand Kevin Costner. I think
now we're not friends anymore.
The aw shucks, like preteen kid kicking a pebble down the road, rubbing his hand through his hair because dang it, things didn't work out. He's always looking down and going like, in reaction to stuff. He's so pouty. That's the word. He's melancholy and pouty. He's either a melancholy cowboy or a melancholy older pitcher for the Detroit Tigers or a melancholy guy hallucinating about ghosts walking out of a cornfield. And
that's
a terrible movie. I cannot get on board with Kevin Costner.
Listen, there's a period of Costner that I love, and most of the rest of it you can leave. Robin Hood is a god awful movie.
It's bad. The non-English accent is bad, yeah.
Over Waterworld as the example for Kevin Costner sucking. But okay, my point is this. My favorite baseball moment is what I would have performed if I was trying to get into an acting school because it's a monologue, and it's Danny Glover storming into the Angels locker room, active Angels in the outfield, and just going on a PG-rated tirade that is still extremely effective, flips the table over. I could probably recite it by heart. It's a hilariously entertaining moment, and Danny Glover is really, really good in it. And that's been for years, over 10 years, probably since I saw it. That has been my favorite moment in baseball movies, partially because how many times can you watch a movie end with the hero getting a big hit? or something. Like that's the end of a lot of baseball movies. So I like things that kind of change the formula a little bit, or at least, you know, the moments that kind of stick out near the beginning like this, where the characters are getting established and Danny Glover's character comes in and just tears a new one into his team. And I love it.
For me, it's the final play in Major League. I have major problems. I've gone over and I watched the movie and I have like issues with like what lineup are they using? Like how is Brown batting second after Sehei gets on first? I mean, how is he the two hole hitter? And then when after he steals second base, which might even be the best play because he steals second base and it's like that Dave Roberts play in game four of the American League Championship Series in 2004 when the Red Sox came back from 3-0 down to beat the Yankees that year when he stole second base by a whisker to help get the Red Sox into scoring position. And then I think it was Mo Vaughn or somebody tied it with a base hit up the middle or whatever it was. And it was like that. They filmed it so amazingly with him swiping second base just by the slimmest of margins. And there's like no music going on. It's just crowd noise. I don't know how they got that much crowd noise pumped in. I think they really filled the stands with a ton of extras and stuff like that. And you see Rachel Phelps' character like in agony, like she can barely watch. She's so stressed out. I've had that expression when I've been watching my team about to blow a game of some kind. You know, you're like, I can't believe this is happening. And so then they come through with the hit. But here's the thing that bugs me about it a little bit is that on the first pitch after Wesley Snipes' character steals second base, Jake points out to right field to call his shot. Well, then the pitcher throws at him. Well, how does Wesley Snipes know that the pitcher's going to throw at him on that pitch? How does he know not to take off on that pitch? You know what I mean? To steal third on the steal third bunt to third base and you know make that make it so that you know Wesley Snipes can score on the play. You know what I'm saying? It's
is this your favorite baseball play?
This is my favorite baseball play though.
Wait,
because it's electric. I like it. It's bothered me in recent years because it's a little bit it doesn't make a whole lot of sense from a baseball perspective. But I have to suspend disbelief because it's a movie and it's incredibly dramatic and I like that they don't have any music going while it's there. It's just all baseball sounds. I mean, I was going to go with the natural, him hitting the baseball into the lights. That still gives me goosebumps when I watch it, but I was kind of torn. Okay, I took a long time.
Lollygaggers.
Lollygaggers
is good. That's such a great one.
Where they come to the mound and they talk about what they're going to get for the wedding gift. I mean, those,
they're all. The entire movie is my favorite moment.
Yeah.
Let's just honestly.
Best baseball play. Liz, best baseball play.
Oh, Liz again. Great. Okay.
Yeah, you're not going to get to go at all.
Yeah, sorry. Good news. I'm picking just the entire movie of A League of Their Own. I feel like that has some incredibly realistic baseball action in it. Like that final play here, if you want me to pick one play, it could be that. Or it could be when Dottie goes into a full split to grab a foul ball. It could be anything in that movie. Everyone looks really realistic. They're playing in skirts. They're playing in skirts and little hot pants. That is hard, and they're all really doing it. They all went through training, and a lot of those extras are actual baseball players and softball players. It's really cool. That's one of the things that really engages me with that movie every time I watch it, because they have that baseball montage in the middle with that great score behind it, with this great like mid-40s jazz horns. So good. Ugh.
Justin, best baseball play.
It's got to be Henry Roengartner throwing a frozen rope from the outfield to the catcher in Rookie of the Year because it is such an extraordinary throw that brings the entire game to a halt. And then the players inexplicably react as though the play is still live, even though the ball has left the stadium. It's pretty much how the entire plot starts. But, yeah, no, that's got to be the best because that's a hell of a throw.
And I'll go with a play that actually happened in real life. The way that they shot the Scott Hatterberg home run for the A's 20th win in a row at Moneyball was kind of goosebumpy as well. So I really liked that one a lot, especially with the guitar, the way they had the guitar score behind it, kind of like a Friday Night's Lightish kind of thing. Was really good.
That song is called This Will Destroy You, just so you know.
Really? Okay. good to know. All right, and the most underrated baseball movie. Liz, you got – no, I'm just kidding. Justin, you got this time.
Great, because I have the perfect answer. I don't think you're even going to need Liz's. This is a movie called Battlefield Baseball. It is from Japan. It is about a team that finally gets into this tournament that they've wanted to get into for some time, only to find out that, gosh darn it, that everyday baseball tournament problem of learning that one of the high school teams, because these are high school teams, is, quote, infamous for brutally killing all of their opponents.
Oh.
So, you know, that's going to be a challenge moving forward. And basically, this movie has people becoming cyborgs. It has a bat that can inject poison, and the narrator is a dog in the stands.
Wow. Wow.
That's not a movie that actually exists in real
that
life.
Has
What's the name of
everything.
This movie?
It is called Battlefield Baseball. It's a 2003 Japanese release.
That has everything.
Yes. Okay.
A
I know what I'm renting.
Narrator.
Wow. All right, Liz, try and top that one. I don't know how
I
you're
can't.
Gonna do it.
I have my answer's terrible. I think Little Big League is actually really underrated.
It is. It's a great movie.
I feel like people don't talk about that a lot. I also feel like Angels in the Outfield isn't talked about a lot, mostly because it's kind of weird.
I still haven't seen Angels in the Outfield.
I think it's cute, but it is. It's a really good movie. But I really, Little Big League for me was that movie that I saw, and I thought everyone, because I didn't watch baseball, but everyone I knew saw these kid baseball movies. And so we all talked about him. I expected everyone to be talking about Little Big League, and no one was. There was nothing catchy. There was no, you know, Ruhlenfurter or whatever the many names that Rowan Gardner was called.
Ruhlenfurter, yeah.
Gardenhoser.
Yes, God, that's such a good one. But there's nothing like that. It was a kid decides to become the GM and then the manager because his grandfather leaves him the team. Like, it was made for me now.
Yeah, and there was so many baseball players in that movie, and
Timothy Busfield is a baseball player.
He can play. Timothy Busfield could play. He knew what he was doing out there.
That movie contains the line that in researching stuff for this segment specifically, I heard a line from my Little Big League of the kid's friend saying, "It's the American League. They have the DH. How hard could it be?" And I was like, "That's a great line. That's a great baseball movie line. That person understands baseball even just a little bit, you know?"
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah, because he's trying to decide whether he wants to be manager. Managing's hard. Yeah, how hard could it be? It's the American League. You got the DH. and one of the best scenes in that movie is when he's trying to convince I don't know if it was the GM, but the team president, I guess, and the pitching coach that he should be manager, and they run him through a quiz. Like, bottom of the seventh, you know, here's the situation. What do you do? And he's like, "Well, who's up? You know, are we on the road or are we at home? You know, what's the count?" Or, you know, it's like he was going through all these different steps, and it was really cool.
That was so cool. I didn't know anything about baseball, and that all that went over my head. But I'm like, he's like actually working this stuff out.
Yeah,
like, that's really neat.
He wants to know who the team has left in the bullpen. You know, I mean, it was a great scene. For me, the most underrated baseball movie, and I think I've talked to you guys about this before, is Mr. Baseball, the Tom Selleck baseball movie where he signs with a Japanese team because his career in the majors is kind of washed up, and it's a really great look at the differences between American baseball and Japanese culture, and a famous American trying to make it in a totally different culture where baseball means different things and the game's played differently. It's a great movie. That is one of those movies I will stop and watch pretty much every time it's on. It's just Tom Selleck he looks like the quintessential, like, late 30s star baseball player who's just starting to lose it. You know what I mean? Like, he absolutely nails it. I mean,
I've never seen it. Now I'll have to watch it.
You really do. You will love it. It's absolutely great. Well, listen, that's a full episode here of Hitting Season, episode number 357. You guys have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I do. Why do you guys think the Phillies have never been featured as the central team in a movie? I know precious few teams have, but, like, you know, when the Twins are picked to be the principal team in a baseball movie, I feel like the Phillies could probably do. They're like a big market team, but they're not the Yankees with all the stuff that comes attached to that. John, I know you've talked about, you've at least asked why there hasn't been a 30 for 30 on the 1993 Phillies, because they're worthy of at least that.
Yep.
But I think you could make, you know, the future is what it is. But the 1993 Phillies would make an awesome feature film. As with the 1972 Phillies, I think that would be.
Oh God, yeah.
That would be a movie
about Steve Carlton trying not to kill everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying not to strangle the bullpen as they blow yet another win.
Like, I know Doug Glanville, Pat Burrell, and Lieberthal were all in Summer Catch, but I don't know if we're counting that.
Oh my God.
You just say Summer Catch. That's exactly what I was going to say, because at the end of the movie, doesn't Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character get drafted by the Phillies, and he appears in a game against the Phillies, and Ken Griffey Jr. hits a home run off him or something like that?
Anybody who went to see that movie is going to be like, going to lean over in the movie theater and be like, my God, they got Doug Glanville.
Right. Mike Lieberthal. Phillies Hall of Fame inductee, Mike Lieberthal.
People went to go see Jessica Biel. They didn't go to see real authentic major leaguers play.
That movie had baseball in it, but it was not marketed as like a, you know, oh, your dad liked Eight Men Out on, you know, watching it as the Sunday matinee? Oh, take him to see Summer Catch. It's the exact same thing.
Liz, any final thoughts from you?
I think I've said everything that needs to be said, other than I'm so excited for the season to start. My gosh, I'm so excited.
Yeah. We're going to start to get to talk about some actual real baseball here next over the podcast. We made it through the dark times, folks, the long off season, an off season where the Phillies really didn't do a whole lot after mid-December. So we're going to get into some baseball stuff. We'll start really diving into this team and keeping an eye on what's going on. And, you know, we'll keep you up to date on the latest info of your Phils as they get ready for pitchers and catchers to start reporting this week. Folks, that'll do it for episode number 357. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Liz, for being my Hittin' Season partners once again tonight. And, folks, don't forget to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon. We got lots of new stuff up there. Chris Jones is joining us on the Patreon for some consistent podcast work. So we are thrilled to have Chris joining us. Make sure that you are checking out the Patreon to hear Chris and Justin and Liz. And I'm doing some stuff on there as well. So, again, sign on up. Go to patreon.com/hittinseason and sign up on the $5 a month tier. And don't forget to head on over to the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review if you wouldn't mind doing that as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season. All right, gang. Good show. That went long, but that was good stuff.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
All right. I will talk to you guys later. I'm going to stop this and go to bed.
All right, me too.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye. Yeah.
Bye.